to give you every kind of strength you need, for every kind of circumstance you meet. And then the next line is important. Not according to your strength. Every kind of strength for every kind of circumstance according to His power in glory. Not according to your need. And that makes a big difference. Our need may be this big or that big. If you just met our need, we might have a worry. Because I will give you every kind of strength you need for every kind of circumstance you need according to His power in glory. And then three important words. The first one is endurance. A little word there means to be patient with things. Now, in heaven, we can handle when things go wrong. Call us lost, delegate. Things happen. And we can handle those because they're just, somebody says, nuts and bolts. We can work with them. We get a bit frustrated, but we can handle it. So the endurance when things go wrong, every kind of strength for when things don't function right, when things go wrong, when things let you down, when things bother us. But the next word, patience, is a word that's always applied to people. So I'll give you every kind of strength you need, for every kind of circumstance you need, according to the problems you have with things and the difficulties you have with people. Now, it's people that love the system. And it's people that make happen. And we have to make sure we experience this faith. And in everything that we do, this, we're going to talk about love for people. And people are hard to work with. And your biggest problem is you. My biggest problem is this. And the next problem you have is people you work with. And there are times when leaders and children and people just seem all those unmanageable. Every kind of thing for every kind of person is done to deal with things and to deal with people. It's not just a stiff upper lip sort of thing. You know, I'm going to survive. But it says joyfully giving thanks. We've been in the business of saying, we're in a camp, and I don't see anybody who can know about something. The sad thing was, the people in the camp didn't show any kind of joy in what they were doing. It was immaculate service and care, but you didn't feel your welcome. You didn't feel you were wanted. If you asked for something, you sort of went along with it, and you might have been for a table or a chair or whatever it might be. Somebody came late, and the course was gone. I'm sorry I'm late, but I was looking up the cost run. The food was served very nicely, but you sort of also felt you were struggling with it. Now, this person was dealing with people that not joyful. And I think one of the characteristics of Christian camping wherever we are is that the verb of Christ, the joy of Christ. And when people come into your camp or little kids, they need to catch your enthusiasm. We create the atmosphere. We never let the minority create the atmosphere. When we're talking about rules and we're talking about discipline, what one of the great rules that we have to remember, you never let the minority create the atmosphere. Not only have they 250 teenagers that didn't catch here. And after about a day, the week says, oh, what a terrible, tough country we've got. But then often, hang on, how many tough kids do we have? How many bad kids? You know what, tough kids? Give me the list of those, well, with him, with her, and that one. Well, that's that four. Well, that's five. Well, six. And a few this year. I know the six bugs of this, and they're the ones really getting in the way and making all the noise and not where they're supposed to be. And you find yourself yelling at the crowd, just yelling at those people, you're letting the minority create the atmosphere. You're not drawing on every kind of strength for every kind of circumstance. You're bullying 245 people because you've got five bands. And one of the great things in that Christian work is to never let the work become a burden so you lose the
Talking about safety to begin with.
The first thing I believe very strongly is you're talking about safety is that your leadership. Now, in certain youth clubs you have weekly,
I think you can work with a person who is not a Christian. But I think it makes a tremendous difference when the person that you're working with is a Christian, because they should have a far greater sense of trust and reliability than a person who is not a Christian. If they don't have a greater sense of trust and responsibility, then I don't believe, you know, that they understand what Christianity is. See, we all run camps, and you get in a whole bunch of... what time is it? Knock off. No clock up there. So that's it. You've got 20 leaders in your camp, and in some of your camps, you have to invite the leaders to pay, and, you know, some of us do, some of us don't. We don't. They can make a donation if they like. We always charge our cadets, because cadets sometimes want to wriggle in and just for the ride. Okay, so they've got to prove they want to be here, and they pay half. But okay, you've got 20 leaders that may have paid to come, or may not have paid. But anyway, they've given up a week's work. What right have you got to tell them what to do? What is your basis of leadership? Where is your strength of leadership? What gives you the depth of your leadership? You're not paying them a wage. They're up at 6 o'clock in the morning for your leaders' meeting, or here in the Thursday, it's 5:30. Leaders' meeting from 6 to 7. Right through the day, they then go to bed with the kids at 9:30. They're supposed to be with the kids 24 hours a day, sleep with them, eat with them, do games with them, duties with them, all the rest of it, committed. I mean, if they're not going to be committed, then come as a camper and get converted. So you want total commitment. They're paying for the ride. What gives you the right to tell them what to do? I mean, let's go back. We were joking. A toilet's blocked. Look, I'm awfully sorry, but Brian, you know, do you mind fixing that toilet? Sure. And he goes, what makes him do that? Not your leadership. The strength of your leadership as a leader is the commitment in the people you lead. Now, if you've got totally committed people, then your leadership can be strong. If you've got badly committed people, then your leadership's a problem. And a guy rang me up in the last May camps in a terrible problem, a leader. He said, Malcolm, I don't know what I did to talk to somebody. He said, even my leaders are smoking. I'm having to put my leaders to bed at 2 o'clock at night. His leadership was so weak. Not because he was weak, but because of the low commitment of his people. So I believe the word Christian there is important. And a committed Christian. The other one is that they're trained in whatever it is. If they're abseiling, they're trained to abseiling. If it's the go-karts, they know how to do it. If it's archery, they know the rules. You know, one of the most frightening things, and it happens from time to time, we have our archery here, which may seem to be dumb, but they're very weak little bows, and it's fairly well controlled. But every so often you see a kid doing that. And I run out and I grab the kid and whisk the kid away, because that arrow goes up and you lose sight of it. I mean, all you can see is that arrow is as thick as my little finger. And when it gets way up there, that's all you're looking at, and you lose sight of it. It just does a little turn at the top and down it comes and you can't see it. At a camp I was at once, an arrow came down and stuck in the guy's, just in the side of his foot there. It hit his head, it would have gone straight through and killed him. Now you see people being stupid, and so your teacher is, don't do it. Now everybody loves to do that. No idea where the wind will carry that little arrow up in the air. So whatever they're doing, they've got to be instructed or trained to do it. You're abseiling, you know, you find a leader who thinks they're smart and doesn't put the safety rope on. You know, we abseil from there, and we abseil down when you've done when you've taken all your kids over the tower, which is very easy. You've got a 6-foot level, a 12-foot level, 18-foot level. So little kids that are scared just go over the little easy one, just get the hang of it. Somebody actually can hold them, if you like, because they're only 6 feet high. But when they've done that, they go down the grotto that you may have found, which you'll see a beam out there by the grotto. And they go down, they come into the water. If they're custards, they drop into a boat. If they're real men, they go in the water and they swim out. Now, we had somebody doing it. They're very well trained, had the safety harness, and the person actually was scared and something went wrong and they flipped over in the harness. But the safety rope was there, no danger. So trained is obvious. And then responsible. You can trust them in what they're doing. They've got a sense of care for the kids. You put a little 10-year-old girl on a go-kart that's almost like, you know, it's driving a car. Kid hasn't got a hope, the thing gets out of control, they go through a fence and smash all their teeth. You're to blame. You put a little kid on a great big horse. That the little kid's nowhere near got the strength to handle the horse. Now you can have someone who's trained in doing it, but they have no sense of responsibility. One of the biggest problems you find in young leaders, isn't it? They're not doing the job because they love the Lord. They're doing the job because they want everybody to think they're good. You know, he runs the horses because I look after the horses. So responsible. And then authoritative, able to get kids to do as they want. Now sit down there and wait until it's your turn. Get away from the edge. Come on, off the track, you kids. There go karts coming around, and the kids do it. Now, the thing that I've learned, you don't have to be a great big 6'6" bod with a loud voice to do that. Remember once here we had a guy, he'd been brought up in India, and so many things, he'd never ever used a spade in his life. Remember once told him to bury a chook that had died, and he said, what do I do? Well, you just dig a hole and throw it in. That's what he did, dug a hole and threw it in. He didn't cover it over. He was absolutely hopeless. And he was just about so big, he's now serving the Lord in Brazil, and there's been a tremendous missionary. His name was Peter. Little, slight little kid, so I had to wear clothes so he knew where he was. First day he arrived here, I got him to scrub the fountain. He says, I've never hated anybody as much as I hated you. I was dead, you know. But I put him in a cabin with teenage kids. And you know, his cabin was lights out first. And the kids just loved him. And he communicated because he cared. And there's no question that Peter cared for those kids. And they thought the world of him. They were all bigger than him. They sort of looked after him. But he had an ability to get control, and kids did as he asked. And it was strange at the table. Okay, kids, shut up. We're giving thanks. No. His table was, you know, quietest. So somebody who can control some sense of authority. And we all know the leaders are hopeless. And there's just riot every time. Well, that kid needs a little bit more teaching and training, but you can't put them in a job where there is danger. All right, and then a sense of stability. We have a leader that we're working with over the years. When he first came, couldn't find a job for him. We offered the caterers, would you like him in the kitchen? And they said, yeah, but for just one camp. You know, at the end of one camp, they were sort of rather bald. And the kid over the years has grown, still panics. We were playing soccer the other day, and somebody got hurt. Tearing around, getting on the mic, where's the, you know, and causing total panic in the whole camp. Now, those people cause trouble. You may have a problem, a broken leg. It was only a bruised leg as it happened. It wasn't broken at all. But that kind of person that has no stability, that they're unstable, they create far more problems, really, than the problem itself. And then a love for people. And if we haven't got a love for people, I don't know that we'll ever communicate anything. If ever we do camping as a job, I was talking to someone in Oz because we were moving around youth workers there, and we'd had a very heavy weekend together. We were running a seminar at the camp Friday, Saturday, Sunday with a seminar in Sydney, main part of Sydney, which was 50 miles away during the day, so we were tearing backwards and forwards to do lectures. It was very, very busy. And one guy said, I've got the vision again. My youth work had just become a job. People were just digits to be disciplined. You know, every kid that we work with is a potential saint or saintess for glory. And you've got to love kids. You know, I don't just mean like them. You've got to have a real deep concern for that kid. Occasionally you might have to suspend a child from your camp because you're not going to ruin the whole camp. We put out a girl in our last teenage camp. She was a little problem kid. And we put up with her, and we talked with her, and we spoke with her, and we really did. And eventually she says, I love, but you're on the bus home. We rang her mother, and I said, I'm not surprised me. She was bragging about all the things she was going to do when she got down there. She wasn't going to let anybody tell her what to do. I said, you'll be back on that bus. And she was back on the bus. But as you put them on the bus, you break your heart, because if you can't win them as a Christian, then society's not going to win them. I mean, you have to see yourself really not as the only thing, the instrument God's got, but you are really the last line, aren't you? You know, putting that kid on the bus was so sad, the best thing we ever did. Kid was back at another camp with their church and came to see me and apologized and was a different kid. Even had kids, two boys I sent home, one that way and one that way. We've sent out 8 kids in 20 years we've suspended from camps here. And one kid went that way, and they both, without knowing, wrote back. And they both received the Lord on the bus home. And both had said, you know, who was that? Praise the Lord for you, brother. Which reminds me, we have a guy, a gorgeous fellow, an old chap. Not like you, he's an old chap. And he fixes our go-karts. And he said, Malcolm, I haven't come here to fix go-karts. I've come here to lead boys to the Lord, girls to the Lord. And he has. And over there, he lines them all up and they polish the go-karts almost by number and the BMX bikes. And he sits at the back and he's a hallelujah guy. And we say, You'll have 5 hallelujahs and 8 amens each devotion, and that's it. You can have as many as you like. You know, your bank book's open. But I love, and this guy loves kids. I mean, what is he, 75 years of age? And the kids love him, Uncle Bob. There's no generation gap. And when I saw him lining them up to do the go-kart, I don't think I could do it. Come on, you boys, line up, they have to do the go-kart. At attention. Yep. You know, you've got them all lined up, rag each, you say, okay. And they do it. They're fabulous. They think he's marvellous. But if I did that, I think they'd think I was a jerk. But they love him. You're saying, yeah, amen, amen. That was a quiet one. All right. Okay, that's people. Looking at your equipment, safe, checked, suitable. Now, your equipment is safe. The equipment has been checked over. You know it is. Now, our confidence course worries me. It's in the bush. It's always damp. Very hard to always make sure it's okay. It's a real worry. You know, the go-kart, horses, pool, confidence course, all, you know, concern me. As a Christian, you shouldn't be worried. But that worries me down there. You know, you look at the rope, and sometimes, you know, the rope is, it's got frayed, and no one's seen it or told you about it. And being in the bush, so we've dipped all the ropes and stuff in Metalex and that kind of thing. They're not supposed to rot. Still worries you. There's wear and tear. And it's not somewhere where you see every day. You've got to go down there and check it. You know, the abseiling rope on the tower, somebody got in, broke into our sports room, and they towed a car with the abseiling rope, and we didn't know. Now, that abseiling rope is worth $450. And somebody said, hey, Mark, I'm sure that was the rope I saw. You had to chuck the rope out, and we used it for other things, but it could not be used. We cut it up into short lengths, could not use that rope again for abseiling. Now, if we hadn't have known. Now, I want to stress this, because years ago, I just happened to be the speaker at a camp, and it was at the CYC camp at Camp Adair, and it was a Christian group had booked the camp. I was just taking the devotions, thank goodness. And we went to the waterfall there. What's the waterfall called? Somebody from there? Who knew it falls, right. And it's a long way down, you know, it's a long way. And everybody wanted to have a look. You know, and I said, well, you can't let them go there. It's all fixed. I've got a rope here, see? So we had about 30 kids in this little camp. And you put just a bowline around their waist, you see, and just fed them out. You went to the edge, and I went to the edge. There was a bowline around, looked over the edge, you see, and of course, being a man, you've got to spit, you see, and go to a dance. And so that's fine. And then we all went back. Every kid had a look, all holding on to the rope, you see, all safe, totally safe, no problem. And that was a good idea. Tie them on, can't lose anybody. One at a time. Everybody was patient. Everyone to have a look. We were walking back, the rope all called up, he was just put across here, and a log came floating down the river towards the fort with a little branch sticking up. You see, the kids said, let's get it, you know. Okay, so we sort of John Wayne stuff, and we lassoed it. And he actually, about third shot, got the loop around it, pulled it, and the rope broke. It was rotten. You know, I'd been standing there looking over there, believing that rope could hold me. You know what I mean? 14 stone of me. And we just get a little snag, and when we got it, you know, he could just go like that. You know, 30 kids or whatever had trusted that rope. You know, it is important you check it. You know, if in doubt. You can maybe risk your kids, but we can never risk somebody else's kids. So, you know, check it through. And I believe the equipment needs to have some sort of challenge with it. That playground over there that Stan and the guys put together, Stan has a tremendous lot around here, some terrific guy, and I think most of you got to know him. But, you know, we've had two really bad accidents of that, always, you know, with about your age. Yeah, maybe a year older. You know, kids do as they're told. And what the people do, adults do, you know the little bar that slides across? Well, they set it going, so the little T-bar's already going, and then they leap off to get it, you know, this Rambo stuff. And of course, as they go, they miss it. The little bar goes on and says, bye! And they go, crash! And this person went and actually missed the bar, and they tried to grab it and flipped over and broke their collarbone. Now, the equipment is perfectly safe, and it's got a rule, you know, notice there, supervision 14 years and under. This guy was about 32. Broke his collarbone. You broke your collarbone. Didn't read the notice. Do you have to ring an ambulance up? The telephone's over there. I mean, that's what you feel like, isn't it? So you have to be so careful. That jigger is lethal. Never ride the jigger unless you're saved. I don't know that we've really, you know, I don't know that we've ever had a kid have a serious accident. The children do as they're told. We had a terrible accident there a while ago. It was a missionary camp, you know, missionary people, real missionaries, you know, serious people. And everybody here is funny, praying and doing that thing. And then we finished about 10 o'clock at night with one of these long sessions. Do you know how many people got on that jigger? 14. How they did it and pumped, I'll never know. Well, they were going down the corner. We've now taken the stump out of the corner. And they were hurtling down there, 40 of them, all screaming. They're all, you know, the youngest of them, about 25, 30. And they came to the corner, and they didn't stack out on the right side. And they went off, and they hit this trunk of the tree. We had two broken collarbones, some broken ribs, and a concussion. All went into hospital. Little kids do as they're told. Adult problems. I mean, they ask for it. You know, so the only accidents we seem to have on that ever are adults. Now, you have to have, I think, in all our work we do, a challenge. You want to take people. You've been down the conference course. There's two levels, isn't there? There's the high boards and there's the low boards. You walk along that one and you eventually get up to the top one. The abseiling tower, there's a challenge. They can go down there, then they go down the stream. Then we take them to the rocks along here a little way, which is about, we've got a long, long way down, three times that height. And that's challenging as well. Canoeing can be a challenge. You know, anybody can go canoeing, and then, you know, you put all your canoes together and you play tiggy by running around the canoes and getting back into your own. You know, you all hold the canoes together. If you don't like the guy, you let go. but it's a challenge. So we want to challenge people, because as we challenge them, we can prove our love and our care and they trust us. It's all part of preaching the gospel. But it's got to be safe. And we never challenge them in an area that's beyond their ability or our ability to lead and cope. Alright, also in regard to children, we've talked about leaders, equipment and children, and that's the numbers that we deal with. You know, the ratio. And you divide and divide and divide and divide until you've got workable numbers. Now, you know, in the auditorium here, we sometimes run games with, say, 250 kids. And the most frustrating thing is, it's a run game, so you get up and you say, okay, everybody, all on the floor, let's move. And everybody's on the floor, and you find five leaders in the back there talking. Nothing is more frustrating than struggling with a whole lot of kids to get them to do something when your leaders aren't helping. What I'm trying to say is, unless your leaders help, your group is unmanageable. And there are times when we do things when the group is unmanageable. I've seen folk go canoeing, and no way do they have enough leaders for the number they've got. If they had an accident, no way could they handle it. People go out tramping. You know, we go to the Kaimais here. And I would put a leader every 10 kids, and every leader has a whistle. You know, so you blow at the back, and the whistle goes all the way up, you all stop. It's easy. Now the track is a lot wider, but when we first started and had this little equipment, you know, we'd go up to the waterfall, take one up the waterfall, 100 people at a time, with all your leaders. You know, it needs to be challenging, but you've got to make sure the ratio of leader and number of children is safe. You can handle it. Also that the children are instructed. The kids know what the dangers are. You know, we say now that, you know, the jigger seat, the side seat, go to the bush because you need to sit on that and just stack out of it around the corners. It won't come off, but if you push the other way, it would certainly come off. The same with the go-kart. You know, we tell kids, drive the go-kart around there, and they used to have to go by the horses. We say, now drive it like a Rolls Royce, you know, that you've driven for the first time. It's supposed to go by there so slowly. Why is the point? Because if you go tearing by there, nothing wrong with it, it's a nice open road, all the horses are all tied up, you know, with a little bit of rubber onto their bridles. And as the go-kart, they all rear up, you've got a whole lot of buff bridles. You know, you don't want to sort of take the bridle off and hook it on something else every time. And it's a nuisance. So the point is, it helps if you instruct them why they've got to do this, this, and this. So you're teaching them, they understand, oh, that's why we have that rule. And aware of the dangers. If you don't do this, this is the danger, this is the problem. Remember when I was a while ago in Northern Ireland at the camp there, and we were abseiling, and I, you know, you could take these electives, and being me, being a bit of a coward, I chose the caving and the abseiling, you see, because I've done abseiling, and that's all right. And the caving, I thought, you know, Waitomo Cave's walking along there, fabulous, you see. Well, we arrived in these little jeeps, and we pulled up, and the guy said, you better put those on, you guys, boots. What do I need boots for? So I found a pair my size, wet through. I thought, that's funny, they're wet. And then you put on these sort of legging things that you tucked into your little plastic things at the bottom. I thought, good grief. And then we had another thing here that sort of zipped around the trousers. I thought, good grief. And looked at all these other sort of fun looking creeps. And then a guy said, put this on, let's make sure the light works. Put my helmet on. Always my light. The light never. We were going through Hezekiah's tunnel in Israel. My light goes out. Wait at the back. Wait for me down there. And I got my light. I said, someone said, is my light going? I said, no, your light's not going. I said, my light's not going. Don't worry about it. You're a leader. You're, you know, expendable. You're already on your way to heaven. Well, we swam through the cave. And I was, you know, going last, you know, telling Charlie, you know, you make sure look out, little kids. And they were way down there with no light. Wait for me, you guys. You know, we ended up drowned, absolutely wet through freezing cold. Ireland doesn't know what sunshine's like. And, you know, We got out, then we were going abseiling down this ridiculous cliff. I mean, God might have a sense of humor. This was too much. So I thought, well, maybe the Lord will come. I'll go last. And all these kids went down there, you see, fine. Till the whole little dot way down there. I thought, good grief, I wish I'd gone first. They were down there. Then the little bloomin' beggars, they passed the lunch down. They're all sort of scoffing, you know, beautiful hot coffee and soup and buns. And I thought, good grief. Well, there was a policeman up there. We should have had a Christian doing it. The Christian got sick, so this policeman from the local constabulary, he was doing it. He was an adventure-bound sort of guy. He said, oh, you're a leader. You know what you're doing, don't you? Stupidly, I said yes. Dumb. Okay, we put the harness on. So he got the rope. Just going over the end. He said, you shit your carabiner, haven't you? Carabiner. It wasn't done up. Down we went. What an experience. It's important. Folk know what to do, the carabiner up, son. Otherwise, the drop might be nice, but the bump at the bottom is going to be serious. And it needs, I believe, once again, to be challenging. All right, let's move along. Rules. So we've talked a little bit about safety. Now we're trying to talk a little bit about rules. And boundaries given, security and safety for protection. If we give children a sense of their boundaries, it gives them a sense, first of all, of security. And lots of kids, well, you tell them what they can do, what they can't do. I've been amazed that kids like rules. We've had kids go to some camps, and that they certainly wouldn't be represented here, where there are no rules. In fact, one of our leaders once went to a camp, one of these camps, and they came back and said, how did it go? Oh, I slept with the kids, that was all. I didn't see them after wake-up time. They never had a leaders' meeting in the day, not even to pray, which worried me a bit. Anyway, and so I didn't see them again until 11 o'clock at night. As a matter of fact, because I never saw my kids, didn't know where they were, I just went up into the chapel, I'd taken a few books, and I just studied for school cert every day. Got a tremendous amount done. Good grief. Good grief. What are we doing? No rules. Now, kids appreciate rules. It gives them a sense of safety, a sense of security, and also a sense of protection. Now, giving the rules is a problem because it's boring. You know, and you can have a whole lot of rules and it's an absolute bore. I think the person that gives the rules to a group of children has got to be a communicative person, a bit of charisma, because you can have a tremendous lot of fun giving the rules, and you know, just because you're having fun doesn't mean say they haven't got it. You know, it was Spurgeon who says, I get people to laugh while their mouth's open, I pop the truth in. And humour's important, and you can often help folk with your rules, and certainly if you've got diagrams and so on. But they are boring, they're often restrictive. Oh, you know, we're restricted, being like in a prison. We've certainly had that said here. And the other one is, it's time consuming. It takes sometimes 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or whatever to do that. Some of the guidelines I find is a help. Shall I lift that up? If the rules are reasonable, we try to have, excuse me saying we and us, but you are experienced, we try to have as few rules as possible, and the rules we have really should be common sense. I mean, it should be obvious that's what the rule is. And occasionally, somebody does something dumb, like we do not say to kids, now don't go around pulling branches off the trees and swinging on the trees. I mean, how many rules are there? But occasionally you'll see some kid has pulled a branch off a tree. Now that makes me mad because these hands have planted nearly all those trees. And I love them. I know every one. They've all got names, you see. But what about the self-esteem of that one over there? There's a little car went over it a while ago. It's never recovered. And I meant to swap it before we had you people here, so you thought that our drive looked good. It annoys me. So what we do, we have a big session. Okay, everybody in the main hall. And we'll maybe the meal time. And I hide this thing at the back and say, I want everybody sitting up. Arms folded, please. You haven't got your arms folded over there. Not that silly grin off your face, son, because this is yours. That girl over there, stop talking there and stop holding hands with that boy there if you don't mind, because what I'm going to say now is yours. Everybody. Okay, you over there, Moon, come on, sit up straight, see? And you get I make a big deal of it. I say, I don't want anybody moving, or anybody silent, somebody just, okay. Okay, we're going to have a minute. You know, if you really want to be serious, you know. And then I go out the door and I bring in this branch. Okay, now look, you kids. Somebody here has taken this branch off. Do you realize that that branch took 15 years to grow? And in one act of vandalism and stupidity, you've ruined 15 years? And I'm serious, or they think I'm serious. And I just get annoyed. Now, kids, I'm sorry, but we're now having to make another rule. And I think that is a tragedy when we have to make another rule. But we've got another rule now, and that is you stay off the trees. And if I see any kidnap pulling bits of trees or leaves of trees, then you're in trouble. And if you have to make a new rule, I make a big thing of it. So that they know it's common sense. The thing that concerns me is how, when you go to other places, just how dirty the place can be. Another thing we might do, if the place is dirty, you know, you've had maybe canteen in the afternoon, we have it from 1:30 to 2:30, and you come to dinner at night at 5:30, and there's papers everywhere, and tins and stuff, and kids have put tins in there. We all sit down and tell the cook this is going to happen, so he doesn't get upset. We say, kids, I'm very, very sorry, I want everybody sitting up straight, but I've got something to tell you that makes me very, very sad, but the grounds are a mess. Now, this is Totara Springs, not some grotty dump. And you folk have left this place in a mess. We are not going to have anything to eat until we clean it. That table go, and you're cleaning over there. That table go, and everybody go. It takes about 3 minutes. 500 hands. 250 people rushing around the place, picking it up. Everybody washes their hands. Back in there, it took a quarter of an hour. Doesn't happen again, that camp. Only happened once. But you've made a point. I get so disappointed when I go into lovely camps where folk have laboured so hard, and there's papers and tear tags and the whole... It doesn't have to happen. And I don't think we help kids if we let it happen. I was at someone's school somewhere in Sydney just a while ago, and I said, I think your school looks beautiful. No, so it wasn't school. We had a mayoral thing, and I presented the mayor with a thing from our mayor, and he presented it back, and it was a bit of a waffle and a rave. And we were standing there waiting to sort of go up, and what do you talk to? He was a Lord Mayor. Don't call him the Mayor Malcolm. He's the Lord Mayor of Parramatta. So I've got my Lord Mayor, right? The guy wasn't a Christian, so I thought, well, we better try and get this guy's wings. So we were chatting away there, and I thought, how do I start talking? Well, I better compliment his city. So I think your city is beautiful. He said, we're very proud of it. And truly, I said, one of the things that amazes me is I hadn't seen any rubbish at all. And he did have one or two, you know, those long dustbin things and going around the streets just tidying up the... And it was very, very clean. And he said, we have a pride in our city, and somehow the leaders had got that through to the whole town. You go down to Hastings and see what a mess that is. It's sad. You go to some of the other places, what a mess some of these places are. And I think we owe it to kids not to do that. So we have a reason. We explain it, we emphasise it, and you've got to insist on it. Now, just one illustration. With teenage camp, if we have teenagers running around at night, we say, okay, we're not going to get upset, we're not going to get mad, we're not going to lose our temper, we're not going to yell at anybody. We will just empty the swimming pool. If it's just your cabin won't swim at all tomorrow. But instead of your swim time, lady, you will be with a wheelbarrow, one of my relatives, around the horse paddock and shovels, and we'll watch 6 barrel loads of horse manure. We had the best rhubarb in the country. We didn't just deprive them of swimming, they got another job. And if I'm in a bad mood, lady, you'll do it with toothpicks, okay? But remember once, twice I think we've done it. Kids were playing up, teenagers were being idiots, a lot of fun, but being stupid. It was somewhere around about 12:30 at night, and I said, okay, get on the mic, shut them up, and I just went to the pool, undid the plug, and the water just happens to go out. And didn't say a word, eventually we got everybody back into bed about an hour later, you see, and everybody was quiet. Next morning, everybody in their togs tearing off the pool, fortunately, everybody dived. and they all came back, Mr. Bear, Uncle Malcolm, yeah, Malcolm, you know, Tubby, hey, Big Ears. Do you realise that the pool isn't empty? There's no water in it. All these little girls, funny aren't they? They buy the skimpiest bikinis and then the biggest towel. That's funny that is. They go on the pool, drop it. Anyway, they're all standing there, you know, 150 kids. Terribly upset. I'm sorry, I thought you wanted me to enter the pool. What do you mean? You were playing up last night, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. And the rule is, if you play up, we empty the pool. I thought you were telling me to empty the pool. Oh, didn't think you'd do it. Well, I did. When's it going to be full? 24 hours from when we emptied it. And I'm not getting up at night, so it'll be 24 hours from this time tomorrow morning. And the good thing is when you do that, we had a lot of fun. Once you've had your growl, forget it, leave it. Paul said that, forgetting those things which are behind. 5 minutes later, let it go. But every time now you make the threat, there's always someone, and he'll do it. When we sent that kid out from camp, it might seem lousy, but I got all these teenagers, I was doing very, very sad. But this girl, you know, she's been bugging the system, and I'm sorry, but my wife has just taken her to the bus, and she's on the bus, I've rung her parents. I want you all to know that. That's where she is, and that's what happened. That whole camp changed. Just changed within 5 minutes, because they know you'll do it. It is no use making threats to do something in regard to discipline if you don't intend to do it. And there are times, if you're the boss, one of the loud, and I don't like the word, I'm not the boss, I just work here. But really, I am the director, I do run it, and the buck does stop with you. And if you are the guy that's responsible, you've got to do the dirty job. You don't delegate that sort of job. If you've got to discipline somebody, you do it. Because if you don't, you undermine your leadership in front of the rest of your leaders and your staff. And I've been to camps where the leader won't do it. He keeps delegating. There are some jobs I'm afraid we have to do. And that's one of them. Okay. Another thing that's a help
is, and I didn't have enough. We had a bit of a plan. We got time left
because we're going the plane to look. I'm awfully sorry. We've got a fault in the aircraft. We think it's going to be okay, you know. Just checking it out. Yeah, it seems to be okay. So we got home very late. And I did some work last night and I got in. Everything was sus for this morning, but the computer had not been used for a whole week and it had a low self-esteem and wouldn't work. So we had to sort of come out here. I didn't have time to check these out. So I haven't handed one out. But that book there, the pink one, is a book that leaders get before they come. They have some idea of what it is. In fact, we've now brought virtually these two together. You'll see a great similarity. But that's the one. They're girls and got a lot of wall paint. 5:20. They sleep in the certain bunk that you've seen if you're in the cabins. There, it's got leader on the end of the bunk. And they're woken up with a kiss of life. So some of the guys don't go to bed at night. They're waiting for camp mother, who's usually a gorgeous thing. And sleep the right way, otherwise she kisses your feet. And they get up very quietly, shower in the auditorium. Then we meet up in the lounge. The heat is on. And there's tea and coffee and biscuits up there. And we sit around the lounge. And then we have a very, very formal leaders meeting. I mean, anybody can say anything. But we plan the day. We go through the day. It's amazing what you can teach. Little things you get across. Ideas you get across. And 7:00, you go into your cabin, start the day, and we have the staff, or that are not leaders, like Stan one morning, Peter the next, and others, and they patrol the cabins. You can never leave your kids without somebody in there. You leave a girl's cabin, a boy's cabin, when you get back there, there's a seance going on. You know, you can never allow that, or there's some sexual stupidity going on, and all this kind of thing. So we have somebody patrol the cabins, but you have your leaders meeting. Then we just break up in little groups of whatever, 3 or 4, and we have a prayer time so everybody prays for specific things. So I find that's helpful. So we reiterate throughout and then emphasize throughout camp. As you go through camp, you emphasize what you need. But important is that your staff and your senior leaders model your rules. Now you say that the BMX bikes are only on the BMX track. The only time they're not on the track is when you're riding them there and riding them back. And then you have a staff member riding a BMX bike all over the place because it's easy. Well, that's just destroyed your leadership. Or you say, you know, abseiling horses and so on and so forth. What is it? Abseiling horses, BMX, tandems. There's one more I've forgotten. No helmet, no ride. That's just a rule. Not wearing a helmet, don't get a ride. But then you see a leader on a horse without a helmet. You see a leader on the tandem without a helmet. So your leaders and staff must support you in your rules because you'll never, if it's good enough for you not to do it, then it's good enough for anybody else. And, you know, very often kids don't want to wear helmets on the horses. But it's funny, if the leader just automatically puts it on and zips it up, the kids, there's half the fuss anyway. Same with the go-kart. I'm not going to wear it. I don't want to wear it. Yes, you put a helmet on. So that is important. Okay, and then during camp, in regard to your rules, you check that they happened, you check that they're enforced, that this is happening, and that these people do appreciate some sense of discipline.
Getting along to some of the kids above the system,
in regard to a child breaks the rules, I think it's good to talk to the child and redirect the child. We're going to finish up talking about the problem child just at the end. But if a child, I mean, if they just do something stupid, I just say, look, that was silly, don't do it again, and away you go. You know, you're all camp leaders. And the skill is to see what needs to be seen and not see what you don't need to see. I mean, if you saw everything, you'd spend your time going bonkers. So a lot of things don't matter. You'll pick it up somewhere. You can't grab everything. But the things you see, you pick up and you take the kid aside, and I normally have a bit of a chat. Don't let them get too close to you so they become too intimate. But I just would chat to them about what they're doing. Now, you're riding that thing without a helmet. If you'd have come off and hit the fence post, you could have had brain damage. Or so you just explain to them, talk to them carefully, and then redirect them in what they're going to do. If they're a problem, we'll talk about that later. Teenagers, I would counsel them and then redirect them in where they go, and if they don't behave, they go home. I would never sacrifice the whole camp for one or two kids. You know, people say that, oh, you know, it's the roughest diamonds shine the brightest. Problem is polishing the beggars. And while you're polishing one rough diamond, you might lose a whole lot. And I don't think it's worth sacrificing a whole lot of kids because you've got one person. And sometimes when you send a person home or you discipline a person in a way, that's the first time they've ever been stood up. I remember going to marry a couple once and the girl was being an absolute rat, and I, being a man, couldn't look another man in the face if I linked her to a guy. She was an absolute pain in the neck. And I told her, sorry, love, I'm not prepared to marry you. You know, you need to do some growing up before I do that. Not that I'm anti-women. I mean, I married one and found it very nice. And had two daughters, so don't you ladies think I'm that. Just happened to be, if it was a guy, I would have said the same for the guy. In this case, it was a girl. And I just folded my folder up and said, I'm sorry, love, find somebody else, but I'm not doing it. You're not ready. You're not there, lady. You just don't know what it's all about. And she stormed out. Father rang me up. What do you think you're doing? Who do you think you are? God? You see, also, I'm a friend of God. And anyway, about 3 months later, she turned up. And she came in, and I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but she came in and said, Mr. Barrow, I want to apologize. There's my vows, that here, that there. And she said, when I left your study, I have never hated anybody as much as I hated you. If I could have killed you, I would have done. She said, you know, for a whole month, I just ate my heart out with terrible, terrible hatred. Just by the way, we were never anointed to be nice. Sometimes a Christian doesn't have to be nice. When Jesus said, you tomb of dead men's bones, he wasn't being nice. When he said, you whited sepulchre, he wasn't being nice. When he said, this is the vineyard that you've destroyed, he wasn't being nice. And the Christian church, we've got this funny idea, we've got to be nice all the time. Now, we're not rude or arrogant or cheap, but there are times when you're not nice. And I wasn't nice to this girl. And she said, eventually I understood, you're the first guy that's ever stood me up. She says, I wouldn't even get baptized because I wasn't going to obey Jesus. And she said, since then I've come back to the Lord, I've been baptized, and here I am. I'm so glad I stood that kid up. You know, I couldn't have seen that marriage last 6 months. And there are times you've got to just say to kids, sorry kids, you might get away with that at school, and you might get away with that in society, and you might get away with that at home, but you don't get away with it here. And they're not used to that kind of treatment, and I think we earn the right. We never apologize for Christian standards. God was here first. It's his world. And then leaders, because sometimes leaders bug the system, and I would counsel them or recommission them, or if they're stupid, I would send them home. We never would allow a girl and a leader, a man and a lady leader, unless they're engaged, to go around camp holding hands. Will you do the same? Certainly in teenage camp, no leader forms a friendship with a camper. That's a no-no. If they do, then the leader goes home. Never had to do that. Said, sorry buddy, but I saw you up the tower there. That girl's just a camper. No. Alright, and if I see two leaders holding hands together, no. Nowhere. Not even, you know, in the dining room or here, leaders don't do it. You know, a girl leader of 17 maybe or 18, a junior teenage leader of 18, and another guy of 19, they're not here to hold hands. They're not here to fall in love. They're here to serve God. And I say, if you fall in love with somebody, because you can't stop that, well, that's fine. If you fall in love with somebody, just tell God that's okay.
Your lecture should be finishing within the next 5 minutes.
Brilliant.
We'd love you seated in the dining room at 12:30.
When that happens in the middle of the appeal, it's fabulous. And and then it hasn't happened yet, by the way. You know, when you're getting on the bus, going to say, look, I've been in love with you for the last week, could I have your address? But there's nothing worse than your leaders not being where they're supposed to be, more interested in where the girl's going to be and swapping their duties to be with each other. Not here for that. Person's discipline. We're talking now about discipline in the last 5 minutes. Is ourselves. And I often say to folks, the way to see if you're disciplined is look at your bedroom. That's where you spend a lot of time. If your bedroom's a mess, the chances are you're a mess. First thing you do in the morning when you get up is make your bed. And you know, there's a lot of people trying to be leaders, and they couldn't organize themselves out of a paper bag with a ladder and a pair of scissors. You know, they're just so totally disorganized. And they say, oh, it's just a mess. Get yourself organized. Get up early. Do you know, if you gave 1 hour a day for a year, you'd have 9 40-hour weeks. Isn't it? 1 hour a day for a week, for a year, equals 9 total 40-hour weeks. That's a lot of time. People say, I didn't have time. You sure? Or you didn't organize yourself to make the time. So that one's important. bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, taken out of its context a little bit, but the idea is there. And then your own spiritual fitness. Got to know that you know the Lord. And I mean that in a very serious way. I had a funny thing. I was in this house, I was starving, hungry, and everybody was out. I was dying of something to eat. And so I went to the pantry, and they've got some little moon bars or space bars or something. They're in these packets. And I thought, what are they like? So I thought, I wonder if I'm allowed one. So I opened the box and took one out. And it's beautiful. Marvellous thing. And, you know, I had a real conscience about that. And, you know, when you're preaching, as we all are, you know, I really nicked it. And I said, oh, by the way, I've got a confession to make. I nicked one of your moon bars. And, you know, the guy said, oh, good job you owned up. Would have been the end of blessing. But, you know, I find it so easy to bend the rules and bend our ethics as Christians. Just a little moon bar, what was it worth? 5 cents? It was in their pantry, in their box. And I think if we're going to serve God, there's got to be a clear sky between us and God and a clear conscience. And your spiritual fitness is tremendously important. And that of your leaders too. All right, better dive down the last section. All right, now what is discipline? At the bottom of that, I've said militarism is out, and I've mentioned this to some of you before, but I could get you all standing on your seat right now. I could get you doing this. Where's it? See, I get you all doing this. I would just say, everybody, up, and you'd be up there. See, be up here, like this, on one leg, holding your nose, holding your head up. Be easy, and you'd all do it, you see. And so he'd say, oh, no, you wouldn't. Oh, yes, I'd get you all doing it just like that, and you'd all do it, you see. Because I would have a machine gun down here when I told you wouldn't do it, so I'd shoot the first row. You'd be up. Just like that. No problem. That's not leadership and that's not discipline. But that's what a lot of people think. If you don't do it, you're told to knock your head off. That's not leadership. Jesus didn't say that. So it's not a militaristic thing. Discipline is teaching a person to do the right thing because they believe it's the right thing to do. So they pack their dishes up nicely. Not because if they don't, they lose 10 points. Because you've taught them that's the right thing to do. You have duties, and we just don't happen to have points for duties. But obviously, don't you have points for duties? No. They should learn to do duties because it's the right thing to do. They're making the place dirty, they clean it. And how do you have fair points for duties anyway? So we sort of have that rule. Okay, on to the next one because we're running out of time. We've got three more to go. Talking about discipline. Discipline your time when you're preaching or speaking. Just whip down these. Discipline, really, yourself, and I'd like to go down these quickly, is teamwork. Praying together, planning together, persevering together. We've got this large church conference, why that's going up, and you'll see lots of other things. We've got two banquets and two nights, Monday night, Tuesday night, 500 people, both banquets different, this whole place carpeted, and what a fuss. The church can do anything if it'll unite to plan, pray and work together. And all our leaders need to know what you're doing. Need to know where you're going, what your goals are. That's your junior leaders. Little cadet leaders need to know. So that's important. A love for children, the importance of delegation. And some people won't delegate. I go to a youth group, and I've been going there now for 23 years, to take their end of the year breakup. And it's so frustrating. This lady, she does everything. She does the parade, she does the marching thing, you know, she gives them an award for the best girl that marches around. She runs the supper, she takes the singing, she pans out the badges or gives them to me to hand out. She does a lot. And along the side there, she's got three rather mature, matron-looking ladies somewhere in their, you know, 50s in their uniform, immaculate. And every night I've been there, they just sit. I thought, I wonder what they're supposed to do. The only thing I think they're supposed to do is look beautiful. And that's something they're never going to do. But they never shift. At the end, she says, I don't think I can do this any longer, Malcolm. It is too exhausting. She is too insecure to delegate. Remember the two rules of delegation? Always inspect what you expect. And delegation isn't abdication. There's a lot of other rules, but they're the two big ones. Okay. New ideas, and often we collapse through a lack of... I'll leave that there. I'm sorry, time has gone. Deliberate together. We've looked at that. In other words, work together. Divide into workable groups. Discern the difficult kids. The homesick child, the sick child, the asthmatic. The child that is almost new in our society. We call them backward children. We're wrong. There's nothing wrong with them, but because of the disturbed home, they're backward in their learning. Now, their mind's okay, but they're allowed to watch television till 11 o'clock at night. They're asleep all day at school. There's no parental care, no parental supervision. So they're very backward. They can't read. They can't write. They're very sad. Now, that's a special category child. So you need to sort of understand your children. And then demonstrate. If you're teaching a game, you know, teach it. When you teach a complex game, break the game up into teachable parts so each part of your teaching is competitive in each segment. Persevere, you know, stay with it, and dignity. Don't panic. Panic is a stampede of self-possession. Sometimes we lose our dignity. You see a leader sitting at the table with his feet up on the table. I would cut his legs off. You know, I mean, that is stupid. Then he wants people to behave. Alright, despise defeat. The church of God doesn't have to lose. Okay, so you lost the battle, or the fight rather, but you didn't lose the battle. You know, very often it didn't work. Now, kids are kids, so it wasn't their fault. The idea was good, so maybe I'm to blame. But we despise defeat and depend upon God. Can I just take a minute? You're going to be late. I'll come in 5 minutes after you. The problem with child, if I can just spend a second. Understand the background of the kids, their parents, their home life. And one thing I want to say down here, when you're counselling, you've got to know them, that takes time. You're counselling them personally, on their own, without other people seeing them. You ask open-ended questions so they've got to talk to you. We all know what open-ended questions are, okay? Question you can't answer with yes or no. But then you give them the opposite to what they were. I haven't got a guy close enough to use. No, nobody here. But see, here's a naughty little kid. And he's really been naughty. I don't know what you're doing. You're maybe, okay, he got the rabbit there and you were screwing the rabbit's head off, or he was doing something really bad, or he's beating a girl up. And you're really angry. Now, just so quickly there, when you lose your temper, walk away. You never do anything when you've lost your temper, okay? If you lose your temper, walk away. That's a rule. But you're angry, but you're in control. And you really want to hit that kid. But that's what he's used to. At home he gets hit. Shut up! Come here! Sit down! Get out the blooming road! That's what he gets at home from his parents, his brothers. That's what he gets from the school teacher. That's what he gets from the welfare officer. And I've gone to kids, hey, you, don't do that. Come here. And the little kid is terrified. I'm going to hit him. That's all he's used to. Now, if you say, come on, son. Come on, I'm not really mad. Sit down. Let's talk together. Now, I never put my arm around a kid. Be careful of that. And I gave civilization. Sometimes I might. Depends. But he's not used to love. And you say, let's go for a walk together. And you go through the aviary. You just chat. Talk to me, old son. Why'd you do that? You're doing something he can't handle. If you yell at him, he can handle that. Belt his ears in, he can handle that. But he can't handle love. So you deal with him in a way that he isn't going to be used to. That's important. Only one aspect after this. Encourage easy communication. And the last two are important. Explain the book. You know, when you do that, this is what happens. And let them know. Now, if 250 kids, that, what would I do? So you explain to them the problem they're causing. Now, that could be the naughtiest kid. One of the things I've often done to a kid goes swimming when he's not supposed to, you see, and he dives in the pool when the gate's shut, and he just got over the fence, went to swim, see. And you find him, see, okay, get dressed, son, and see me at, 10 minutes' time, and we'll be in my study over there, I want to see you. Okay, that should frighten him. Little guy gets dressed, everybody knows he's going to come, and he comes in there, and you say, okay, just sit there, son, for a minute, I'll get round to you. eventually you get him. And you talk about what he did and the danger and if he'd have sort of hyperventilated and fainted in the water and drowned, you say, row, row, row. And then you say, now you realise it's wrong. He says, yes, it's wrong. And I would say, what do you think is a fair punishment? Now, so far, I've got about 6 months to go before somebody does me, then I'm out, see? So far, I've never missed on that one. The kid has always given himself a worse punishment than I would have done. And I say, what do you think is a fair punishment? Well, I suppose I shouldn't swim for the rest of camp. Oh, that's a bit tough. No, I think you're being too tough on yourself there, son. Tell you what, no swim for the rest of the day. Oh, gee, you're good. That's what you were going to do anyway, or you were going to stop him. But we need kids to see the problem for what it is. It's a very sad society out there, little kids. So I think that is important. And where do we get to? Yeah, the direction they're going. And then in conclusion, prove your love in a way they can understand. Giving them responsibility is not always the answer. When you talk about problem children, there's always somebody who says, make them a leader. I disagree with that. Why should you become a leader? Because you're a creep. Okay? What about the good kid that should be a leader? Come from a Christian home, works hard, got to be there. Why shouldn't he be a leader? Why should the bad kid always be a leader? The other point is, okay, so you disagree with that. What about this? If you make a leader of a bad kid and it doesn't work, you've got two problems. Now you've got a bad kid who's leader. Now, sometimes giving them responsibility, we have kids that are naughty. And I'll say, hey, fella, you're always getting into trouble. You know, you're really bugging the system. Now, look, I'll tell you what we're going to do. I've got to sweep these paths here. Can you give us a hand with these paths? We'll work together. Or I'll go into Gordon and say, Gordon, what are you doing there? So I'm rolling out some pastry. But I've got a kid, and if he washes his hands, could you look after him for a while? Do you know, it's funny, but that kid gets working with you. And he works away, and he just changes. But just making him a leader, I know it works in some instances, but it's usually the pat answer. Whenever you talk about problem kids, it's the pat answer that comes out. And I don't believe it is the total answer. Alright, phone and discuss with parents. See what sort of parents you've got. You might have delinquent parents, but you've got to work hard. If you've got good parents, fine. Talk to the leader of the team. Maybe talk to the whole team. Often do that. Goes, okay, team, sit down. Now, you're all getting at John here, okay? John, how about you duck out for a minute and go and tell him in the kitchen I want a cup of coffee, or you've met without him. Now, look, kids, I know he's a bit difficult. I know he's a little bit slow, and I know, you know, he hasn't had a shower yet. But, kids, he needs a lot of love, and I'm trusting you kids to show this kid you care. Now, how about it, guys? Come on, he's a kid that needs your love. Oh, yeah, but, yeah, okay, let's work on this. But when you finish a deal like that, pray. Oh, kids, all sit down. Let's tell Jesus about this. Jesus, we're so sorry about John. He's a real problem kid. But we're all going to try and love him and be nice to him until he has a super camp. And you brought your problem to a spiritual level. Two kids who have a fight. And these two kids here, you see, from Nelson, have had a real knuckle. See, and they're both tough beggars. God's getting them more sanctified as time goes by. But they've just had a real knuckle, and you separate them. And it's not difficult. They, you know, say, what happened, Graham? Right, shut up. Just keep quiet. Then I just shut up. Tell me what happened. You'll have your turn. Okay, is that everything? Right, your turn. And they both tell you. You can usually then make some assumptions. And then suggest. I generally suggest they shake hands. No, I'm going to shake hands. Are we going to wait here till we do? Because this is what happened in Vietnam. The North wouldn't shake hands with the South. We had a war. We're not going to have Vietnam here. They don't understand Vietnam. We have to change that one a bit, bring it up today. But we talk together. But then eventually when you win, okay, we're not going to win, away you go, come back and talk to me, but eventually you win. I always, even with teenage guys, not girls, with girls I would have camp mother, but with guys and little girls, I say, okay, you jerks, you've shaken hands, that's good. Come here, you beggars. And I put my arm around, Lord Jesus, we're sorry about what's happened here. You've seen these kids having a fight and how stupid it is, and you died on the cross because of our stupidity and our fighting and our sin, and we thank you now that John and George have made it up. And I prayed, Lord Jesus, they're going to be real good friends. Now, come on, you beggars. And you often find they become the best of buddies. Now, in this rush of everything, try and get your problems, get them to the throne. Okay, another thing there, we've often, not often, sometimes sent them, no, you're sending them home because you've got idiot parents. So we'll ring the parents and say, look, I've got John here. I've got a lovely family on a farm. Would you mind if I sent them there for the rest of camp? And I've sent quite a few kids onto a farm, and the family have taken them in, and they've had a real home for the first time. No swearing, no filthy language, clean sheets on the bed, never seen a home like that. And very often, when that's happened, the kid and the family have had a real friendship. In fact, it happened a while ago, and the kid, instead of coming to us for the May holidays, went to the people on the farm for the May holidays, and that was better. But you can't have them ruin your camp. And the last resort, suspend them, and don't forget, Psalm 126, they that sow in tears shall reap in joy, and he that goes forth weeping shall doubtless come again with rejoicing. Folk, without trying to be super pompous or pious, one of the great lessons we have to learn to do is weep for kids. My father wasn't a Christian, and I went to Bible school and I bumped into the subject of hell. It shook the living daylights out of me. And I learnt to cry for my dad because he was going to hell. He got saved in the end. But through learning to cry for my dad, who I love so much, without being pompous, I've learnt to weep for others too. And when you have a kid that is the worst kid in camp, and you can get on your knees without being stupid and silly and emotional, and you can shed a tear for that kid, your attitude to that kid will be different. And sometimes with a problem kid, we are the problems.